Marrakesh. What is the first image to come to your mind? What is the sound? This is the first brutal encounter I had with the city. This is Gemma Elfna, La Piazza, the biggest pre-tech digital TV in the world, the biggest spectacle ever. I came to Marrakesh for the Biennale. Many works have to do with sound, and many artists decided to engage with the city through its language. Jakob Kierkegaard is an artist focused on acoustic phenomena. That's what his biography says. But from my point of view, he's the artist who tried to catch the inner, otherworldly sound of the desert, to record the radioactive silence in Chernobyl. It's in Marrakesh with the nomadic and collaborative Freak Out sound installation at the unfinished Théâtre Royal, an empty concrete box that failed to be an opera house. We meet at the Hotel Almaz in the Nouvelle Ville, nearby the theatre, where 24 speakers play at the same time the sounds of Marrakesh as 12 artists decided to interpret them.
The concept of Freak Out, or Freak Out, because it comes from frequency, is or was invented by Carl Michael von Hauswolf to use the frequency spectrum, the audible spectrum, and actually a little bit below that, from 0 hertz up to 18,000 hertz, to divide that into 12 parts, like ranges, like intervals, because we are 12 artists. And then we were given, each of us, a frequency range where within we could do whatever we want, create whatever sound piece we want, but only in this range. In the end, we would have 12 individual pieces that would play together in the space we were given. And sometimes there are more rooms, sometimes one, but there are always 24 speakers, like 2 speakers for each. The artists who have the lower frequencies would have subwoofers, and they would be placed around, and you would be able to walk around or just to experience this piece together, all these different pieces, without them making any mud or any sort of unclarity because of the frequency range. Everything is divided. So it's a sort of like working with the whole spectrum of sound in a very pure and simple way. And since we are very different artists, some of us are even architects or educated, like biologists or visual artists. I come from music, actually. We have a different approach. But to always work with the sounds of the city where we're in. So I never know beforehand what I'm going to create. I just know what frequency range I'm being given, because it always shifts. You know, what I had last time, my colleague will have this time, and I will have the next range. Now I have the highest for this time. So I went to Marrakesh with this challenge to find something here that has a very high frequency range. So I walked around and I found in the Medina Souk, the place where they construct, they're like blacksmiths. They hammer and they weld these iron things for beds or whatever, these kind of ornamental things. And it's very, they really work on this and they know what they're doing. One is like hammering things, like doing the same movement all the time, like putting the hammer down, like clink, and then like picking up something, bending it, and then putting the hammer down and there were a lot of interesting hammering sounds there, and some of them were like very much like ding, 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 ding. So I used that and filtered away all the other frequencies and isolated that frequency that is within my range. This is the idea. We have the frequency range, and whatever we do is totally justified as long as it's in within this. That is the composition. And it's a kind of almost like a, I don't know, kinetic structure where, because each piece has a different length. So when the short piece ends and starts over again, the other piece might not even be finished yet. So it always changes according to each other and renews itself, just like the world does. It's just like creating a little thing that can sort of grow by itself and sort of that sort of we can draw ourselves back and not be in charge of everything.
In 2010, Kierkegaard had fled to Ethiopia to discover the country through the ears of the others, through the ears of Ethiopians. This approach stands, in my opinion, in that unsolved and uneasy quest and ambiguity of every journey, being distant and at the same time trying to find authenticity, trying to feel as they feel.
As for my Ethiopia piece, Ears of the Other, it was coming from an interest of experiencing Ethiopia from a sound point of view. But immediately I thought, well, whose ears are listening? Those are mine, my Western ears. What can I hear? What will I notice? Maybe I won't notice what they hear, because maybe they know some sounds, they know what they mean, but I don't know their meaning, so I don't even hear it or notice them. Whereas maybe they don't hear sounds anymore that I hear, because I hear them for the first time and I notice them, and they are like just totally blind or deaf for the sounds that I hear. The whole idea of ethnology is, for me, not so much about how I experience things, but how can I actually experience what they experience? How can I hear what they hear? So I was asking them if they could describe a sound that they had noticed, that they thought was a characteristic for their lives, or could be a sound that they had paid attention to, that they thought, this is like really like Ethiopia for me, or being here. And at first they didn't really know, and they were like, what do you mean? And I don't listen so much. Or so I had to make the comparison with something typical visual, like something like a sunset or like your baby. Or and then they were like, oh yes, of course, oh, but coffee grinding, for example, has always been something that I remember, the sound of the coffee grinding, because they do the coffee ceremonies, you know, like from the beginning, and grind it, and they roast it and grind it in this little thing, like they do. And so on. And then I was like, okay, can we record it together? Okay, so we went to coffee ceremony with some friends and then we recorded it. And so for me, that was an approach to record something, to ask them to tell me what they like to hear. But what is very important for me is to let the sounds speak, to respect the sounds and try to understand what they are about. Because I believe I cannot record something without understanding it. I can, of course, record it. Maybe sometimes it helps not to understand too much, because that's another approach. But what I mean about understanding is that I at least feel that I understand, or it speaks to me, or that it literally, in a way, speaks with me. Because as a composer, you take a sound, or you play a sound on a cello. I've been, you know, playing cello, classical cello. I've been learning that years ago. And that was very much about controlling the sound. You control it. You have to know exactly what you want, how you want to squeeze that sound or strangle it or nurse it. But with a sound from the city, wherever I've recorded sound, you have to respect that sound and to see what it does. And then I will take the decision from there, what I can do with the sound, how I can present it, how I can record it. It's all a collaboration.
This approach reminds me also of what Franz Boas did in Linguistic with his article on alternating sound, and what he did in cultural anthropology, establishing the cultural relativism and the participant observation method of fieldwork.
I think one thing that I have come across as a thought or a conclusion for myself or an approach is that this whole thing about understanding is not that easy to talk about understanding if you understand something or not, because you always understand things from your own perspective. I started thinking about this when I was going on my second field trip to Ethiopia, and that was with the French filmmaker Vincent Moon. We were about to go with a Danish filmmaker as well, and I remember we had this discussion because, like, how much do you need to understand about what you record in order to record it? Where she was just started an art school, and she was more like, we need to understand what's going on. You know, you cannot just go as a Westerner and just like, you need to research, you need to blah, blah. And I remember we were actually getting really opposed to that. It's sort of really, hey, no, we want to actually have the liberty to go and not know too much. Who are we as a Westerner to go and know about what they do in Ethiopia? I think it can very quickly become very arrogant. I think we're very quickly we're afraid of being ignorant, which is good. But what I'm saying is, what our research became was to actually deliberately distance ourselves from all that knowledge and research. Of course, we knew what we were recording, but we were recording an exorcism ritual, we were recording a Lali Beloch, like a singer from a tradition of this Lali Beloch, a polyphonic female choir, and so on. Some singers. But by drawing back from all this sort of intellectual European understanding of things, we were allowing just to sense. Because I think if you know too much, you know all this, and then you experience things from your knowledge. Yeah. But if you try to draw back and just to watch, no common TV or something, you know, like just watch and see, then you will see, and then you will start to just to use your senses. Then you can know about it afterwards. When do you want actually to get the information? When do you want to just to allow yourself to dive in and experience something without knowing? That was very important for us.
In 2013, Touch released his vinyl record Conversion, for which he collaborated with a Danish string quartet to have his two pieces, Labyrinthitis and Church, interpreted by classical instruments.
The reason why I chose the title Conversion was because I wanted to convert the sounds of some of my earlier pieces that I had created with real sound, like sound from an environment, sounds from my own ears, and sounds from abandoned rooms in Chernobyl that I had created from using different methods. And then these sounds occurred to convert them to convert them into instruments, to play them, these sounds, with classical musical instruments. That was the conversion. Because I believe when we listen to classical musical like instruments, like a cello, the cello has so much history. Just the sound of the cello makes us think of lots of different emotions and a lot of, you know, the whole history of classical music. It's terrible. But if you try, then I think you need to try then not to play the cello with an emotion, because there is so much emotion in it anyway. It becomes too much. So by asking the cellist, this quartet or trio or this percussion ensemble to really play only that transcription of these tones that appeared in these Chernobyl rooms where I did this resonant test or method, I could create a composition in a way that were not overflown with my emotion of major or minor chords or happiness or sadness or anything, but just created from this method, or even a sort of a mathematical model. So in that sense, to create some music that has a more space for the audience to make their own story, to feel their own emotions, so they're not sort of overwhelmed with my emotions, my egoistic idea of how things or how you have to feel like an audience. But it has to do with trying to also to draw myself back, to be less egoistic in a way. We all want to say something in this world, but the world says so much. I can be a curator of the sounds, collaborator of sounds in the world. They come through me and then they go out in records.
We hand up in silence that he tried to record in Chernobyl in 2006. But what silence? And what is silence? What does the silence reveal of such a place? Dangerous, one might say.
I just came back from a trip to Fukushima in Japan. So there I decided to go visit the nature. Because I could easily go to another abandoned town, like I did in Chernobyl. But I thought, now I did that, you know, like 8 years ago in Chernobyl. What really interested me in Chernobyl, I realized, was the nature. Because there was no people there. And because you don't see the radiation. You don't see it. You don't smell it or you don't hear it. But after a while, you start to realize that something is totally wrong or totally different. Because there are no people. Because you know that this place is radioactive. The forests are radioactive. The trees. The earth. So you start to hear the wind in a different way. You look at a tree and it doesn't look like a tree anymore. It looks like something else. So again, it happens within ourselves. The sounds are just the sounds. The tree is just a tree. It doesn't care about us, but we see it differently. And so for me, it's not so much about whether it's dangerous or not. It's more about questioning our own perception of things and allow ourselves to experience something that is sound. Just sound, but to realize also that we are the sort of mediator or like the ones who experience things in our way. Because what I did in Fukushima was just to focus on the nature. I just recorded, also on video, the nature. I tried to actually find the places that looked the most idyllic, to make a link to the classical paintings of, like, the Buddhist paintings of the Muromachi period, that are like these vertical scrolls where you can see like a little mountain and then like a little hill going down and then like up on a bigger mountain in the back and then the sky. And I tried to find these kind of images, because what is the idea of an idyllic landscape today? You know, we have this idea of the nature being something pure, something clean, something green, something profound, like back to nature. But you look at the nature and it has changed forever. It's radioactive. It's not anymore what we want it to be. But so we see it. We see it. We know it's recorded in Fukushima. So I think that that's what's interesting to me, just to experience things, but to know this is from here, nothing more. And then you start to hear something different. It all comes back to ourselves. How does the sound of wind sound like? What is silence? You go to Fukushima and you listen to the silence there. It started snowing when we were there, so it became very quiet. So I'm standing in this radioactive landscape and listening to the silence. I would say the silence there sounds very different than from in another place that is not radioactive. You could maybe compare two recordings and you wouldn't hear the difference. But if you knew where you were, it would maybe sound different.
This interview was recorded in Marrakesh, February 2014.